This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 5, Episode 17, Where's the Line? Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Berners is live from the top of the Lord's Pavilion, and we get a bit snippy about Andre Russell. We also answer questions about trigger moves and what to do if you want to play cricket in Australia. All that and more coming up on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to another edition of the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to playing and coaching better cricket, no matter who you are, no matter where you are, and no matter what your ambition might be, from the playground through to the test arena, as the ECB once said, I think. Joining me on this journey are three men, good and true. First of all, it's Director of Cricket Coaching, a man at Millfield School, a man who is terribly unwell at the moment, so he's you've got to give him a bit of sympathy. It's Mark Garraway. Welcome to the show, Garris.
Yeah, you certainly do. I don't sound at my best today. I hope that the content will be all right, but forgive me for sniffles.
In full health, though, is another man who struts his cricketing stuff, this time at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Welcome to the show, Lavers.
How are we doing? I'm 100%, which is a relief, because Garris sounds terrible.
And it's the way you found an echoey room just to give yourself, your voice, a little bit of gravitas. I like that as well, Labours.
I was echoing, sorry.
But the best location of all from everybody this week, he trumps everyone. It's a man who is sat up in the Lord's Pavilion itself. It's Berners.
Fantastic. Just monitoring a new Pitch Vision recruit, actually, who's playing today for the MCC. Against the MCC Young Cricketers. It's a lovely day. We've got Paul Nixon and Darren Bicknell at the crease right now, and glad to be online with you guys.
Fabulous news. Well, keep us posted on what's happening there, Berners. And speaking of Pitch Vision, we've got a little bit of backslapping to do before we do anything else, because it's not often that we give ourselves too much praise. It's a bit self-indulgent, but I think this week it's worth mentioning that on Facebook we posted up a little post that I thought at the time was just a little bit funny and would maybe attract a couple of thumbs up from people. 850,000 views later, we had over 1 million views of our website in 1 week, which smashes the previous record right out of the window. So how about that for getting some attention on Facebook?
That's awesome.
Fantastic.
I'm dead impressed with that.
What was the specific post that did that then?
Well, it's the one called Fancy a Net. So what I would suggest anyone doing, rather than me trying to describe it in audio, it would completely lose all humour that it has. It's an image post. It's called Fancy a Net, and it's one of these in the modern meme style. If you've seen all those with that text, you know, that white text with a black border around it, and a couple of photos. And it's called Fancy a Net, and it's a situation which many cricketers around the world will instantly relate to. So go to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, have a look at that, and if you do find it funny, on the off chance that you do, then give it a thumbs up and share it with your friends.
And just on that, the posting of myself getting pinned 30 miles an hour. Come on, coach.
No, it looked a bit nippy, Berners, but I think you were caught a little bit flat-footed, weren't you?
Where the guy had it on military kind of medium outside off stump. He's then reset it without me knowing and fired in about a 70 mile an hour Yorker on leg stump, and my foot's gone with it.
Well, good excuse. That's the excuse I used the weekend when I got out for naught, when I borrowed someone's bat because someone was borrowing my bat, and I said the middle on this is terrible, because so I spooned it to mid off instead of taking my side to victory. The other thing I wanted to mention this week was something that happened in the IPL, which is Andre Russell's slight unorthodox method of trying to get a wicket against Shane Watson. Did we all see this?
Yeah, I certainly did. Yeah.
So what did we think? Is this gamesmanship? Is it cheating? Is it one step too far over the line? What's the thinking here?
Well, it's not cheating at the moment, is it? But it is definitely pushing the boundaries. It's a combination of good thinking and a brilliant idea, and then a slightly questionable spirit to how you play the game. But I guess that's for someone else to decide, really, of whether it's the right side of the line or the wrong side of the line.
Yeah, I think it's not. I think it's, you know, I think it's trying to deceive the batsman in an unfair way. And I think that's the difference. Deceiving the batsman is all well and good, but trying to do it by pretending that you're not going to bowl and then bowling, I think that's an unfair way to deceive the batsman.
I'm not going to disagree with you, but I'm going to say, what about when a spinner stands on his back leg for ages?
Yeah.
Well, it's in the same ballpark, but is it exactly the same?
And well, if it becomes a regular part of the game, then it is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a grey area then. If it's sort of the same but not quite the same, then you know it's either got to be in one area of yes, it's okay, or one area it's bad. It's the same thing.
Well, depends where you draw the line, isn't it? I mean, because if he spends a long time on his back leg but he never actually stops, he's not pretending to not bowl anymore, then that is different. And
well, that's
the question
interpretation,
is,
though, isn't it? Surely.
Well, everything's interpretation.
it's got to be black or white, isn't it?
Well, it's got to be black or white. Isn't there an area where there's a debate to be had, and to say, right, here is where we draw the line?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Let's have a debate and then let's draw the line. So it's either okay to do it or it's not.
Yeah, and no, I'm saying it's not.
But we can't have spinners allowed to do it because they bowl at sub 50, and medium pacers and quick bowlers not allowed to do it because they're bowling a bit quicker. It's got to be one or the other.
The interesting point would have been what would have happened if Watson had just stood there and smoked him out of the park for floating up a 72 mile an hour medium pacer. I mean,
I'd have loved that.
That would have tidied one up. No one would have done it again, would they?
Yeah, put that in your pipe and smoke it.
You have players, but like Gareth said, you also have some people actually have run-ups where they basically almost stop in the delivery stride, don't they? Yeah. And have kinks and jump off the wrong foot, slingers, guys who hide the ball. So it's nothing new. I mean, I guess the moral of the story is you concentrate and you're watching all the way through the crease, right?
You can take it back to the Goffey sticking his tongue out, or Flintoff not lifting his arms when he jumps. I mean, it's a change of your action, it's a change of what you're doing, but it's all designed to put someone off, isn't it?
Yep. It certainly is.
But I'm still fairly strong on the idea that if you are, the difference between doing something different and and actually pretending that you're not going to bowl are two different things. The intent of it really is the difference, and that's very hard to judge, and that's why it's a fine line and a difficult thing to get right. But I think that is the wrong side of the line.
So did Pollard pull out of his bat throwing exploits at Mitchell's Stark's head?
That was quality, wasn't it?
Yeah, for a guy who can throw a ball 120 yards, he's rubbish at throwing cricket bats, isn't he?
He's got a terrible release point, isn't he?
Yeah.
Far too late.
Big bat, that as well, would have done some damage. Probably a four.
I've got one of his old bats, Bernard. I might have a go at the garden in a minute.
Okay, let's wrap up this section with the yes-no round. Three questions that we can only answer yes or no to, no matter how much more that we might want to say about that particular topic. And Berners, you have the questions this week, so when you're ready, fire away.
First question, drills are important but overused.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Second question, pad up from the start if you're batting at number four.
Yes.
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 Caution.
Okay. Final question, the reverse sweep should only be played to ball red from the hand.
No.
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 As part of a new feature on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we're going to be talking about some of the venues around the world that use the Pitch Vision system to help cricketers improve their game. And where better to start than one of the premium Pitch Vision venues, which is Cricket Asylum, which is in Yorkshire. And I'm joined by Matt Dawson on the line now. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Yeah, thank you, David.
So tell us a bit about what you do at Cricket Asylum.
Well, when we opened a couple of years ago, it was based around sort of a net hire facility, obviously with pitch vision built into all the four lanes, wanting to make this sort of technology accessible to all levels of players. As we've evolved over the couple of years, it's slowly becoming more centred around coaching. Obviously, the kids and parents can all see the benefit in both the full-time coaches using the technology on a day-to-day basis.
And how does that technology integrate with what you're doing? Because I think probably one of the main things that people worry about when they're thinking about technology is that it's going to be taking over from the coach. You know, it's going to be going away from the traditional forms of coaching. But how does it work with a venue where pitch vision is integrated into every single lane like that?
I think because you've got it there all the time and you can call upon it at any time you want, it's just about learning to use it as and when you need it. Rather than, like you said, letting it take over. I might do sessions where I don't use it at all, but obviously majority of sessions it will get used because it's there and it's built in, but it's there. You might do 30 balls on the bowling machine. You can go and have a look at a few shots and then go and drill it. I think it's about using it as a tool rather than letting it take over, like you say.
And would you say that is one of the key unique selling points of the facility? And if so, what other unique selling points do you have at Cricket Asylum?
Yeah, the technology is the massive unique selling point. We get kids coming from all over, and it not only does it assist the coaching, but it adds that sort of kudos to the experience as well. Being able to say how fast your ball, getting your pitch maps, it's all very exciting as well as useful. And on top of that, the full-time coaching staff that we've got, that adds to it as well. It's all well and good having the facility and the technology, but if the coaches don't have the sort of know-how and the the personality with the kids, then it wouldn't be used as much. So it's a combination of the two.
And the area that you're in is very heavy for cricket clubs, so you get a lot of young players coming in. You get a lot of, I imagine, senior clubs coming in as well to use the facilities. How much do senior players use the facilities in that way, the technology in that way?
Yeah, well, this sort of January to April time is our busiest time for seniors coming in. And it does vary. You get some of the more serious players and clubs who use it for video analysis and pitch maps. And you might get a local club or group of players coming in and they laugh at each other, swinging themselves off the feet or getting hit in the box or whatever. So it's used in two ways for the clubs. They find it useful, but it's also an entertainment factor as well, which is great as well.
So you can vary it depending on how serious that you want to take it. If you just want to have a bit of fun and have a hit, and that's all you're interested in doing, then there's still a use there.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's not just all about pitch vision, is it? I mean, you talk about the coaching there as well. The standard of coaching is improving every year.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we've built a really good team. Myself as head coach, obviously leading the sort of overall programs, but we've brought in Steve Oldham, who's the former Yorkshire first team bowling coach. He's come in and he's been doing stuff with us for over a year now, and he's just been fantastic the way he's sort of made little subtle changes to bowlers, which has had a massive impact. This year on our academy we've had Kevin Sharp, another former Yorkshire first team coach. He's worked with our academy since January and that's been fantastic. And Chris Schofield, who's doing more and more with us, who's the former England leg spinner you might remember from a few years back. He's quite local, so he's doing more and more. So that side of things is really building, and we are really sort of particular and focused on the standard of coaching, that it's a player-centred environment.
There are also problems associated with indoor practice. How do you overcome those issues that indoor practice isn't the same as outdoor practice?
It's about trying to vary it. I mean, obviously, the nets are great for sort of honing your technique and all the rest of it. But this time of year now, especially with the coaching, we're trying to make it more game realistic. We have a number of things that we do within a net situation, which try and build in shot selection and outcomes rather than just technique and hitting a ball. Certain scoring games, when you're out nets, all this kind of thing. Trying to simulate field sets and different game situations. I think when you're doing 10 weeks with a set of kids in the nets, you know, you can't just net, you've got to make it as game realistic as you can.
How do you think the players who have come along to your sort of higher end academy sessions are going to fare in the coming 12 months?
It's quite exciting actually at the minute. Our Ultimate Academy, which is kind of the pinnacle of our coaching program, at the moment we're just looking at players who are going for, we've got two that are going for a Yorkshire under 10s trial, we've got two lads that last year were only playing club cricket, maybe a little bit of district cricket, and now playing for Lancashire under 13s, and it goes all the way up. I had a lad in this morning actually, 8 o'clock in the morning he had a session, and he's now got in the Lancs under 19 squad. So it is really beginning to take effect, and we're not just seeing him improve in the technique in the nets, it's starting to show in the selections, the number of kids that are going for trials. So it's exciting times in that regard.
You mentioned the Ultimate Academy. What are the other programmes that you're running?
It ranges. We've got our own player pathway, which starts at Cricket Cubs, we call it, for 4 to 8 year olds, which is a fun session run by our new full-time coach, Tom. That's becoming really popular as well. It's just fun. It's based around the sort of fundamental skills of sport. And then we've got our development courses, our one-to-one coaching, leading into our Ultimate Academy, which is sort of high-level club or district and county-level players. In addition to that, we're just focusing on primary school coaching as well. We're running a programme locally. We've got some sponsorship and some funding to do a lot of primary school coaching and competitions, trying to sort of boost the game at grassroots level locally.
Okay, Matt, so if there's people in the area who want to find out more about Cricket Asylum, whether it's, young players, senior players, or, whatever level, and they want to find out more about using the facility, how will they get in touch with you?
Best way is via the website, cricketasylum.co.uk. Sort of contact us on there by email, and we'll sort out a programme that suits them.
Fantastic. Well, good luck, and I'm sure we'll be speaking to you again soon as a major Pitch Vision venue.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks, David.
Okay, it's time for us to have the questions section on the show. Now, this part of the show, if you're a new listener and you're not sure how it all works, is that listeners to the show and readers to the Pitch Vision Academy website will send in their questions about problems they're having around cricket playing or coaching, and the team answer those questions. The best question of the week is a prize winner, and the prize is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com, and you can find out more by heading over there to see the kind of online video courses that we do. So, Bernard, what's the first question that's in the competition to win the prize this week?
First question, it comes in from Laxman, and he's just saying that he currently uses the forward press trigger movement, and he's used to doing this for quite some time, and he's noticed that while he's shadow practicing at home, his feet tend to go back and across for some shots in between. So he's asking, should he now change his trigger movement, and he wants to know what the benefits will be of doing this over the forward press.
I think first of all, if we're looking to change anything, we need to make a bit of a decision as to if we do need to change. So we just need to assess the process we're going through and assess the outcomes that we're generating at the same time. So is he being successful at the moment? Is he scoring runs? Is he scoring runs that he's happy with and his coach are happy with? In which case, possibly you'd say stick to what you're doing. Or is he not happy with the way his cricket's going? At the moment, we don't really know if he's completely happy with how his batting's going or not, but that's something he needs to consider. But I don't see that there's an obvious need to change unless he's struggling to perform, which I would have thought he would have included in there if he was really worried about the form and the way he was batting.
When it comes to trigger moves, are there any things which are in that category of non-negotiable?
A few years ago, I'd have said, yeah, there were, and I'd have listed a massive ream of it. But through watching people and through understanding people, there are differences. And the first thing, I'm going to go back to the question, and I'll come back to the one that you've just asked me. But was that he identified this in his shadow practice. Now, it could be that his shadow practice and his match practice are two different things. So it would be worth validating whether what he's noticed in his shadow practice actually correlates over into his gameplay. I think that would be the first point for myself to have a look over, because it could be that he's getting himself worried about something that actually doesn't occur when he's playing in a match situation. The second thing is that Bob Warmer always used to say that we should coach a number of different trigger movements that fit in with the person rather than just coach a trigger movement. And when I played, we always used to look to go back and across and we'd try and get it in early. And that was the sort of generic message that was going around. But Bob recognised very early on, and he's not been with us since 2007. So all of the stuff that we talk about in terms of individuality, Bob was talking about that, you know, for decades beforehand, was that people have different approaches to it. And he noticed that it's got to fit in with that individual because you've got to be ready. The second thing that he noticed as well is that trigger movements tend to be more prominent at the start of an innings than they are once you get into the innings as well. So again, it would be worthwhile having a look, if you bat for an hour or so, getting somebody to give you some feedback on what you're doing at the beginning and then what you're doing when your eye's in and you're accustomed to the bowlers and the pitches and any sort of negative thoughts that you might have or any conscious thoughts that you might have gone. And generally, Bob would say that trigger movements would drop off as you went through an innings, particularly if you played it for any great deal of length. So my first point being, make sure that there's a correlation between what you've seen in your shadow practice, which can often be different to what you do when you're out in the middle. And secondly, that it's about finding your own way. And going back to Sam's point earlier, which I thought was a very valid one, that because you've done it all of your life, makes it sound as if this front foot press makes it sound as if that is very much part of you. And I would be loath to change that just because you've seen something in a shadow practice, which may or may not be something that you do when you get out into the middle.
There's plenty more to discuss there, but let's move on.
Next question's from Graham. He's a South African cricketer who's currently plying his trade in Scotland as an overseas player. And he's just saying that he's looking to spend a summer in Australia to gain some more cricket experience and culture over the World Cup. He's a university graduate in sports management, and ever since he's spent the majority of his summers either coaching or playing cricket in various different places around the world, by the sounds of things. And he's just looking at our ideas behind him going over to Australia and what can be done there and maybe what he should pursue given his background.
Well, it's actually just taken me straight back to a friend of mine who's done a very similar thing, actually. He's a Kiwi, and he was our liaison officer when I took the Ireland under-19 side to a World Cup over in New Zealand. Fantastic bloke, and we had very much same discussions like this. One of the challenges with going over to Australia in particular is that there are different laws as to England, for example, about coming in and taking jobs, and you have to get your head around the visa application process and all of those things that are associated with effectively going over there to be employed. So that's the first point of call. That's about research. It's about you getting on the internet. It's about you asking the right questions to make sure that you make your passage into Australia as fruitful one as you possibly can do by having all the documentation in place. So that was the first bit that we discussed when myself and a guy called Liam Williamson had this discussion in Queenstown a few years ago. The second thing is, I think it would be right and proper for you to have, if you want to go to Australia to do that, it's probably going to be unlikely that you will get a job within sports management or cricket straight away whilst you go over there, because of all of the different loopholes that they have in their immigration and visa strategy that they have. So it might be worth thinking about, how long do I want to be over there before I get a position which is going to be a career move? And also, how long am I going to stay there as well? So Liam's presently out there. He's been over there for 3 years. And obviously, there is a Cricket World Cup coming up around that part of the world. So he's embedded himself within the culture of Melbourne, as it is for him, and is now playing significant roles in the preparation and the execution of the World Cup that's going to be coming up within a year or so in that neck of the woods. So I think it's about your strategy being, how do I get in? How long do I need to be there to establish myself? And having a real time plan about how you're going to do that, rather than just thinking, I'll go over there and get a job straight away, because that isn't always the experience of people that have been over there. If you're playing, it's a slightly different thing, because whilst you're playing, as an overseas player, as you are at the moment in Scotland, you might then develop the links whilst you're going through, and within 3 or 4 months of you being over there, something might open themselves up. But if you're looking to go down the sports management side, if you're looking to go down the administration side, then it might be worth having a longer term plan rather than just a 6 month one.
Lavers, have you had any similar experience with playing or coaching overseas?
Yeah, I've done it myself, but I think there's a few key words that Gareth mentioned in there, and obviously things like preparation is key to know how you're going to do it. But one of the other ones I think is vital, and in this day and age, which is becoming easier and easier, is the networking side of things and being able to go and make contact with people and try and establish as many links as you possibly can do prior to getting on that plane. And it's something that obviously 15 or 20 years ago would have been a very, very difficult thing, and you're very much relying on word of mouth and people that you know and people who are friends of friends or friends of family or things along those lines. And now with modern technology as it is, connecting with people is actually a much easier process. Because of that, there's potentially more competition when it comes to trying to seek opportunities, but the opportunity's there. So I'd definitely say network, get in touch with as many people as you can online and via email, and then turn an email into a Skype conversation if you can do, because it means I generally find that when you're networking, a written contact is great, a conversation's even better, and then face-to-face is obviously what you want to have ultimately. So network as much as you can, get to know as many people as you can, try not to close off doors because they're not your ideal position at the moment. If there's any link from what you're being offered to what you want to do, then go with it. And it might mean doing something that's not your ideal job for 3 months, 6 months, 18 months, you never know. But if it's leading you towards what you want to do, then definitely give it some consideration and take it on board. Obviously, as we said, there's a World Cup coming up, which is full of short-term opportunities. However, short-term opportunities will often have the potential to lead to more. So go out there and see if you can and get your name in the hat for one of those opportunities that's coming up. A lot of the higher up and more leadership-based roles have already been advertised, as you may well have seen on the site at pitchvision.com/jobs, where we've got all the cricket jobs from around the world. But there will be a lot more mid-range or sort of more introductory level roles, which are equally important and equally good for the CV and for experience, that will be coming up between now and when the competition starts. So I'd definitely keep your eyes open, speak to as many people as you can, and be as nice to as many people as you can, because ultimately you want someone to do you a favour somewhere along the line.
Yeah, and so many jobs come about through someone who knows someone else, and they say, oh, you know, you should apply for this job because it's, you know, it's the kind of thing that you'd be good at. And that kind of thing, having real relationships with people, it does work. And networking is a bit of a horrible word. It conjures up, you know, someone handing out business cards at a cocktail party. But it does work if you do it right, and you build genuine relationships with people that can over time be mutually beneficial.
Absolutely. I would imagine you're in the same boat. Gareth possibly as well, where somewhere along the line people grab hold of your contact details, and I probably get one or two a week still where I'll get a message from someone just saying, look, could you help me out? I'm looking for some sort of opportunity in cricket, and I'd love to come to England, or I'm in England and I'd love to come and work with you to do X, Y, and Z. The issue is often those emails or those methods of contact aren't very well written, and there's not a lot of time spent on them. So it's trying to show that you actually mean what you say, and you're really, really keen to achieve something. So first impressions do count, and if you're making contact with someone, even if you're thinking, well, I'm sending this to 200 people, well, 200 people that you can either speak to very well and take a bit of time and care over and be nice to and try and give them the big picture of what you're trying to achieve, or you can write two lines asking for a job. And it's very much about presenting yourself the right way in that way.
And I think Graham's got a touch of that already. You know, his original email was a lot longer than the question that we asked. So, and he went into details, and he was, it made me feel like, he was someone who was genuine rather than someone just firing off a load of emails and crossing his fingers. So, Graham, hopefully that's helped you, and let us know how you get on if you find something in Australia or you go a different route. It's time for the Soapbox 60 Seconds, where somebody on the team gets to rant and rave or just chat uninterrupted about something that they're interested in. And this week, Garrus has gone into his mind palace and he's picked something out and he's ready to go. Garrus, your 60 seconds starts now.
I'm going to talk about honest feedback this week. And we've had a really interesting start to our school season this year. We've been away on pre-season tour and we won a couple of games. We got absolutely annihilated by Worcestershire Academy stroke second team, which gave us an opportunity to be really honest with ourselves and each other, which has been dead good. And we've played against another couple of academies who have come with a lot of professionals playing in there, and we've come second best in games, but not by very much a couple of times. And the same thing happened last Sunday against Gloucestershire Academy. And what we came up with was we needed to then, instead of talking about form, I'm not in form, actually go back to our basics. And one of our players in question has really revisited his basics. What does he want to do when he's standing at the crease? How does he want to play for his first 20 balls? And then how is he going to expand? And as a result of that, his innings yesterday that I managed to watch on Skype had all of those things in there, which was fantastic. So honest feedback, starting point for everything.
The highlight of that for me was the fact that you watched it on Skype, Garrus.
Yeah. Quality, wasn't it?
And that is the end of the show for this week. But don't go away just yet. We have a couple of things that we need to sort out before we go. The first of which is the winner of this week's prize. If you remember back a few minutes ago, we were talking about who was going to get the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And now is the time to decide that very thing. We had Laxman's question about trigger moves, and Graham's question about going to Australia for cricketing career reasons. Which one did you prefer this week, Garrus?
Well, I really like Graham's one because it's the first question of that type that we've had. And obviously we've had some anecdotal experience of helping somebody else from myself, and then some very formalised and the top man probably in the world in terms of networking, Mr. Sam Lavery, to add something in there. So I really enjoyed that. Graham, this week you're the winner.
Yes, advice from the cricket maven himself, Lavers. Well done to you, and hopefully that online coaching course will help you in some way or another. There's plenty to choose from, so you can pick out something which suits you to your most specific needs that you can get. Now, unfortunately, as far as I understand it, Berners has had to vanish.
He's been evicted from the pad.
Yeah, he's been asked to move on from the pavilion because
Reg in his white coat's come along and sent him home.
Yeah, he didn't have the correct tie on, so he's out. So anyway, Garrus, I think you might have to stand in with the phone number this week. So
I've got it here.
You've got all the details. Brilliant. And what would that phone number be and the email address if somebody wanted to send in their question?
Well, they could give us a call, David, on 0203 239 7543. Or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, indeed, there's plenty of other offices as well. There is our Twitter at pitchvisionacad. And there is our previously mentioned Facebook page, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. Over 30,000 people in that community. Over 1 million views in the last week. It's the place to be if you want to get your cricketing fix from Pitch Vision. If you want to listen to this show every week, it comes out once a week, every Friday, then you can do so by heading to iTunes and doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us hiding away in there and just click the subscribe button. If you want to subscribe in any other way, go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for all the details on how to use our RSS feed to stick into your player. That's all for this week. I hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Garrus. Cheers, Labours. Cheers, Berners.
Thanks, David. Thanks, guys.
Cheers, fellas.